Maureen will be guiding you today.
Okay, let's give a few minutes to just see if someone has reflections.
And I'm finishing my lunch.
Okay. Just raise your hand if there's something you'd like to share. If not, we'll continue.
Right, I forgot my microphone. Yeah, for me, anytime I hear someone talk about the rituals and the dying process, I just am so grateful that I had some of this information when my daughter died 23 or something years ago. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, Jordan, if you'll start the slides, I will just begin. Today, we're going to write some poetry. And if you are intimidated, if you're one of those who ran the other direction when the teacher said we're doing poetry, feel free to continue writing prose or whatever you've been comfortable with. Our next slide, Jordan, please. Our focus today will be in sending words of loving remembrance for our friends who have crossed to the other side of the threshold. Let me read this to you from Steiner. The dead experience our thoughts and feelings as art or creation. They experience our memories of loving thoughts analogously to the way we experience art in this world. Not only do we become then their living books, but also their art. This is the deeper meaning of remembering the dead. So as all of the presenters this weekend have mentioned and sort of taken for granted that you are aware that when we send any memory, any loving thought or a focus our attention on a trait or perhaps a saying or a gesture of someone who has crossed the threshold of death, they experience that in a way as if they are standing before a beautiful painting or a portrait. And it's such a lovely thought to give us strength that what we do can have so much power. The next slide, please, Jordan. So in that way, when we are writing about those who have crossed to the other side, we have a threefold benefit. And go ahead and take that slide down and I'll just talk to you. So Patrick just made it very clear that as he expressed these practices that are related to the rites of the Christian community or in the things that we do in meditation, these practices are geared to the journey of the person who has passed. And that, of course, does not negate the importance of grieving. But that's a different process. And we saw with what Marianne shared with us yesterday and with what many of you have shared that the experience of grieving goes along with these practices. But in writing for the dead, we have a threefold benefit because first, the person who is left on the physical plane has a focus of a worthwhile activity, something that can be done in that period of great grief that prevents one from degenerating or to falling into complete despair over the loss of the loved one. And yet, that's all you're thinking about anyway. The thoughts are there all day, every day. And so to commit these memories and these impressions and our feelings about those numinous objects, to commit them to paper gives the person something to do, not to push grief aside, not to assume that one can get along without that grieving and that deep, deep mourning that Patrick spoke of, but to give something to do that you realize gives you solace because you're doing something of value for the loved one who has passed. So it has this, the benefit of giving you a focus. And secondly, when we put our grieving into the process of grieving, into art, into the art of poetry or writing prose, we have a gift for ourselves of the activity. We have the gift for the dead in giving them that memory that we have entered into, that attention. And we have a gift to the world because we have the potential readers, and they will be recipients as well of this gift. We saw with Marianne's grieving process that there were those who had written before who gave her so much help and assistance in going through her process. And then we know that her book, which chronicled those years, has been so helpful to many others who have experienced a loss, and especially the loss of a child. So that's the threefold benefit. And poetry itself is, I liken it to the fact that when the oyster experiences a piece of sand, it naturally pearls over that with something smooth and something beautiful. And that getting rid of the grit by putting the pearl around it that the oyster does, this is very much akin to what we do as poets to come to something. And I've always felt that there are two main aspects of the reason that a person writes poetry. There's first that gesture that Patrick gave yesterday, where we stand before something that is so wonderful and so awe-inspiring that we have to do something about it. We have to try to put it into words. And this is a very spiritual activity of trying to name that mandate that Adam was given of naming the world. So to name that awe is the first thing. But the other aspect that I find that for me has always been the reason to write poetry, and I think for many others, is that there is the grit. There is the question. So I come to poetry with a question, something that's ill at ease, something that's not right, something that's so incongruous, that just doesn't make sense. And I need to examine it. I need to examine it more fully. And I find that when I write the poem, there is something that the process gives back. It is a response, and that response is, I would say, you might call it the muse, you might call it your guide, your angel, or your higher self, or perhaps the person who has passed is there for you. But there is something coming that gives a response to the process of putting your attention there. And this is like the oyster pearling up around the grit. It is that thing that comes back. It's not an answer. That would be too pat. That's too much like the Hallmark card. But what does come back is something, some kind of knowing that wasn't there when you approached the blank sheet of paper. And that learning, I always come away from the poem understanding something that I didn't know when I came to it. And Ursula Le Guin said, the art knows more than the artist. And that's usually the case. And that's why so many poets and writers will not talk about their work, because they say, well, you know, whatever you see, whatever the reader brings to it, that's the meaning that's there. So we will see. Jordan, would you put the next slide up? I think it's number 4. So here is this one. Here is a poem by Yehuda Halevi. He was a Spanish physician and philosopher from the 11th century. And he said, 'Tis a fearful thing to love what death can touch, a fearful thing to love, to hope, to dream, to be, and oh, to lose. 'Tis a thing for fools, this, and a holy thing to love. For your life has lived in me. Your laugh once lifted me. Your word was gift to me. To remember this brings painful joy. 'Tis a human thing, love, a holy thing, to love what death has touched.'" So this is a poet who came to this feeling of despair of, you know, why do we bother with anything? Is this going to end? Why do we bother loving when we're just going to lose this person? And in the process of that poem comes to the end, when it is a holy thing to love what death has touched. So the loved one is already gone, but he's able to bring it to holiness. Next slide, please. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Please take that down. I'm not quite ready for it. So just my face again, Jordan. Thank you. So death has its own biography, its trajectory, its pace of unfolding, its own participants, its unique character. Patrick said every death is different, and that's so true. And he also described so beautifully what I was going to talk about, the numinous quality of a life around a newborn baby, where everything is so spiritual because the threshold is opened up. So parents always recall the details years later. They can tell you for every child exactly how long did it take, what the season was, what the weather, who was there, who was so helpful, and who said that insensitive thing that was so hard to forget. All of those things. But death itself calls for such a remembering. It's the eulogy recalls the life, and Patrick explained so beautifully why the eulogy is what the eulogy is supposed to do, to find those patterns and the meaning in the life itself, and give that gift over to the person who has died and is now remembering their life. But when we have an intimate encounter with death, we find that we need to tell that story, not just the story of a life, which we will spend the rest of our lives connecting with as well, but the story of the death. Grief and mourning seem to want to share the story of a person's passing with other persons who also love them. And then we also find that we want to share them with anyone who listen. And I felt that yesterday with Marianne's beautiful sharing, that how many years is it? 19? And still 20-some, it still has that power. And And it still needs to be told again and again. And so this is what we do in the writing. The one I'm going to share with you today is that my father was a sheep and cattle rancher, but his greatest joy, or one of his many great joys, was fishing. He loved to be on the water. That service yesterday was very powerful for me as well, because of remembering, because probably all the waters of the whole world were ones in which my father examined for what fish could be caught in them. And so when he died, his death was a peaceful. It was not a violent death in any way. And yet I felt that he had to work really hard. For 9 days, his family was gathered around waiting while he did the hard work of catching his death. And so after, I wasn't a fisherman. I was never interested in fishing. I would just go to be with him. But I found that after he died, I kept again and again coming to the metaphor of fishing in my poems. So that slide, Jordan, would you put up the one about the boat, the fishing? So this is the poem I wrote about his process. And in this poem, death is the big fish. The aging angler has seen a primordial form shape-shifting in the wake of human hunger, the way it swims sleek and unhindered, brilliant gills, fins glistening in the white path of moonlight on the placid lake. He chooses his favorite lure, one that quivers blue-gold as it moves through depths like an old memory. This fish, his death, leaps free of the lake, gleams in slanted rays of late sun, calls his boat to the spot where circles ripple over a calm surface. His last catch will be a worthy prize, old and cunning, with dappled striations of blue-gray, silver scales healed around several rusted hooks, and the snapped lines of lesser fishermen trailing from its wide mouth like desire. This one's a fighter, not easy to land. Say he sets the hook some early pre-dawn when it's feeding on minnows in deep pockets of cold. He will have to play it out till they are both exhausted. Real time after winding time into the lowered pole, slowly pull back and give it just enough slack when it leaps above the surface in magnificent final fury of the captured. So that was my father's big fish, and he did a good job. He was able to land it. Next slide, please. So for our first prompt, I'd like you to think about the death of someone you love. First of all, call that person to mind clearly, and send this process as a gift to them. Think about the ways in which that person seemed to be calling the shots. Were there any aspects of the death or the wake or the memorial that the person may have orchestrated? Sometimes a person will wait until you've all left the room in order to be able to cross to the other side. Other times you may have find that she waited until that special person was able to arrive from far away and be there at the bedside before he or she could actually let go and die. Was this death a reflection of the life, or did it seem to come from afar and contradict the whole biography? And what was the season? What was the weather like? Were the trees and flowers in bloom? Was it a beautiful spring day so that it seemed like the natural world was contradicting the idea of death altogether? Or maybe it was cold and the ground was frozen and everything seemed so uninviting when you had to put the person into the ground. Maybe it was fall after harvest and it was barren stubble and everything brown. was it sunrise, bright sunrise early in the morning, or the dark of midnight when no one was around? Was there a thunderstorm? The participants, this is really the important thing. Who was there? Who wasn't able to make it? How were the relationships altered by the death? This is something that we find again and again, that everyone who participates and who comes so close to the threshold to be able to observe a crossing is changed by it. And many, many things happen among the living when someone passes. Sometimes old angers erupt and new jealousies come forward. Sometimes great arguments happen around the decisions to be made. But often there are amazing healings that occur. And what is specific about this particular death? What was nature's involvement? That's very important. Who was it yesterday who spoke about the bluebirds? That was so powerful because so many people think that the way the birds behave on a day is a message from the other side, and that birds really give us that connection to what the world is feeling, and that in the great chain of being, as Shakespeare always used, so that the world feels the grief and either ushers a person across easily or with difficulty. So the mood, think about the mood. Was it peaceful and love filled or harsh and off-putting? Was it in a nurturing environment? Time of day, dark of night, or dusk, or dawn. And the kind of death, all of those things. Was it anticipated or surprising? Was everyone able to be there and everyone around the grave waiting? Or was it a shock that required so much presence of mind to even begin to go forward and deal with it? So I'm going to ask you to take about 15 minutes and write about a particular death. We've talked about so many aspects, but don't try to do too much. Think of the one salient thing that you experienced or someone experienced that stands out as the question or as the grit in the oyster that needs you to pearl over it, or the thing that was so awe-inspiring that you feel like you need to do on paper this gesture of awe. So it's now time for you to write, and we'll have some silence while you're doing that. Let me also say, if there's something else that you want to write about that has nothing to do with the prompt at all, that's perfectly great. That something else is coming to you. So whatever it feels like. And I might also mention, don't forget, if you are doing poetry, all of those devices, metaphor, simile, alliteration, assonance, synecdoche, metonymy, all those things we learned in high school, just put them all in there. The guides will help you make it beautiful. take another 3 or 4 minutes to try to put some closure on your writing before we begin to share. See, most of you still working, but I hope that this will not be the end. You'll have to go back and rework those poems and revise them and share them with others and get some opinions, then hone them until they are perfect and ready to submit to the other side. But let's see how, if you would like to do a show of hands. Jordan, maybe you'll take the slide down and we'll see all those lovely faces. Thank you. And I'll put you on the larger view. So if you would, you're welcome to unmute yourself, or if you want to raise your hand, if you'd like to share, and we can physically have Jordan unmute you. I remember now that it was Francis who shared the beautiful story of the bluebirds and her at the funeral, and I wanted to thank her for that. Now, don't everyone raise your hand at once. Okay, Tisha. Tisha, have you, let's see, can you unmute yourself?
Yes, I can. Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you. I lost someone a little over 2 weeks ago up in Northern California, and we haven't had a chance to celebrate or do anything. And his name was Raman. He was born Raymond, but at some point in his life he changed it to Ra-man, which means sun man. Very interesting. He also died of an overdose. I have to say that. And this is just what came up. I'm so grateful. Thank you. this moment travel to you like your name over eons. This moment in dark hours of early morning, before dawn, you waited alone. No one would hold you. You knew you would die alone, crying out, "Will you hold me?" Knowing that perhaps this was the medicine that would redeem you. Abandonment was your cross. What did it mean when you said, "You set me free"? She sets me free. Did we break you wide open? In the flesh, you knew something about crucifixion. And now you know something about resurrection. The time you chose before Easter, so perhaps you could see it all, the entire orchestra, the knowing, the suffering, the death, the resurrection. And now you must wait and do much work. Bring us together, shine light through dark and ugly places. You must endure through this time, while humanity must endure, suffer, and wait until we can bury that sword, until we can bury you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tisha. It was really, really beautiful.
Thank you so much, Maureen. That was was really, really needed.
Yes, and I hope you will continue. There's many, many more there. That was so beautifully put. And also something so wonderful to be able to share with others who loved him and share that same loss, who continue to love him and share the same process with you of accompanying him. So I think that I just have to say that poem is such a wonderful example of the dichotomy between the grieving and what those here are suffering, and the desire to send them not the suffering, but to accompany them on the process, and the awareness that they're not suffering the same thing as we are at this point. So yeah, thank you. Going to be a hard act to follow. Who else would like to share just a reminder also of those touchstones of respect, which of course you all have, and confidentiality about what is shared by others.
Patty here. I will read. I hope it isn't too long.
No, we have plenty of time, Patty. It's not going to be too long.
This is called Grandma Bone. Her family was not religious, but they were farmers, aware of the seasons and realities of life and death. Birthing and dying of animals was part of their livelihood. She brushed her teeth the night before she passed and celebrated her eldest son's 51st birthday on the night before that with fireworks. I found her cold and dead at 4 o'clock a.m. when I went to check on her every night, to touch her cheeks and kiss her face. "Rob," I cried, "come." Her firstborn son came quickly. "She's gone," I said as softly as I could. He held my hand and squeezed it, then hers, and bent to kiss her face. "No strain or pain," he said as he stroked it again. "No fireworks," he smiled to me. The family arrived. We sat around her bed, the daughter, her husband, and 4 children. the younger son, his wife and three children, us and Rob's two sons. People spoke, told stories, laughed. No tears were shed. We knew this was coming, just like the Easter slaying of the lambs, the inevitable, the natural course of events. Several hours later, the undertaker was called. Someone came to pronounce her dead, but the man turned and said, "Why did you wait so long to call?" Rob replied, "Was it long? After 77 years of living with us, was it so long to say goodbye for 3 hours?"
Thank you so much, Patty. That was beautiful. And a real biography, the whole biography, and what a story.
Yeah. Well, I was quite myself, with, of course, my life and many funerals I've been to as I lived in Spring Valley. So I always went to these beautiful anthroposophical gatherings. And here I was with a family, and they are all atheists or claim to be. And yet, intuitively, I was so touched by the reverence with which they carried their mother's passing.
And isn't that experience so much what Patrick was saying about how when we approach the threshold, even if we are purport to be atheists, that we cannot help but notice the sacredness of the time. I think you experienced that with that family.
Yes, I did. Thank you for letting me share that.
Oh, thank you for sharing. And if there's anyone who would like to share something you wrote yesterday with Marianne as well, we didn't have enough time yesterday for too many sharings, and we certainly would be glad to hear any of those.
Hi. I'd be happy to share something from yesterday. I like it better than what I just wrote, which needs more work.
Thank you, Dad.
So my friend, my oldest friend outside my family, died on August 8th out in California, and I'd just moved out there a few months earlier to presumably spend the last years of our life together. August 8th, this was the one about the change of season. August 8th, no change of season. No changes of season in Carmel by the sea. The change is your passing, my friend. The change is the silence in your kitchen. The change is the wind blowing in your yard across the flowers you had stopped watering. The change is your dog, who had already long since said goodbye. We would drive to Wyoming, Stella and I, for the chilly season of higher altitudes, looking for and not finding a new home for her. And after she'd gone to her sleep to follow you and her other papa, Will, I found my way up into the mountains to view the still distant snows of the thoroughfare into Yellowstone, your place of predilection I had never understood, where I could say goodbye to the childhood friend, to the man who always smiled at me, whose last passport picture now graces my keyboard and invites me to travel where he has gone.
Oh. Beautiful ending. A real poet. Thank you, John. I As a fellow Wyomingite, I appreciate that what can happen in the mountains that can't really happen anywhere else. Thank you.
Did you actually write it as a poem or prose?
Oh, I wrote it as a poem.
Because I was going to say, it sounds like a poem.
Yeah, it's line, but I resist a lot of poeticness. But yeah, it's lined as a poem.
It's natural.
Beautiful.
I could go and bring the bar way down for those of us who are in awe of what has been shared. I would share what we were asked to share today about the one death I never attended. You ask about the one death I recall of a loved one I saw passing. What was it like? In reflection, I realize it has not happened. I have never been there, never attended the moment itself in person. Always the news reached me afterwards, the whisper outside my door, the phone call of fact, leaving me scrambling for the detail in my imagination. I recall perhaps the sound of voice of the bearer of news, the weather I witness to, the weather I was witness to at that point. The moment of disbelief quickly overcome, reaching for the soul, traveling outside their body, searching. Searching, I travel out to meet them, wondering what I can share to inspire confidence in me, in them. Try to make space in my soul for their vastness.
Thank you.
So it's somewhere between a poem and a prose, I guess.
It is. And again, to reference what Patrick brought, you are able to hold the many that were not accompanied, and that is a real important mitzvah. Want to say while we're waiting for someone who feels, if someone else feels like they want to, what a gift that you give when you share your loved one with the rest of us, because you're right now you're sharing your art and you're also sharing these individuals who have graced your lives, and we have this little chance to be part of, in a way, a bigger community of the living and the dead. Is there anyone else? If you're all satisfied with the listening, let me just say,
I think I see Linda raising her hand.
Okay, I'm seeing maybe, where is Linda? Oh, Linda. Oh, okay. Great, Linda. Can you unmute yourself? Or Jordan, can you help her, Linda? Thank you. Tell you that. There we go. Okay.
Go ahead, Linda.
This is for my mother. It's rough. Bear with me. November, Thanksgiving was the last time I held your hand, felt the warmth. I knew you were not going to stay with us for long, and neither was I. Work called me back to my home in another state. But Dad was there, always. And on the cold gray morning of December 14th, 1998, you rose up, and like those birds I love to watch, you flew away. Dad, ever faithful, was there for you. I was looking up at the birds in flight around the bell tower of the college I was attending to my business. But why didn't I go to you? Why wasn't I there? I think you were waiting for me. My cousin visited you, and your face brightened and then dulled back again when you realized it wasn't me. She told me this. Why wasn't I there? One last time. Dad was with you, and that had to be enough. My thoughts winged to you as I was watching birds fly around the bell tower, tolling your time to depart with them. That's it.
Thank you. Thank you, Linda. In the poem, then we hear that realization that is the question, why wasn't I there? But then the answer is it was, it had to be what it was. It was, and that reality is also just that, the reality. Thank you. Is there anyone else? Some of the faces are not here. Some of you are present and we're not seeing your face, but you are, if you'd like to share, you could unmute yourself and speak up.
I'll go ahead and share a sort of a different take on the exercise. And this is anticipating the death of someone I love. Searching ahead of myself for an experience not yet lived. Proactive grief. An experience as sure to come as the sun setting and the sun rising again. The pinkened dark becoming light. The night growing coldest before the dawn. The stars joined by bird song. Moving in the half light, the purposeful participants of holy vigil, attending to attention released. Midwives to letting. Midwives to letting. Midwives to letting.
Thank you. Thank you, Jordan. I'm sure that Marnie would like to hear the proactive grieving. Melinda. But hope it helps. I think we all do that to a certain extent, especially in a marriage. You always think, if I don't go first, I'm going to have to go through this, and. don't know if I can see all of the faces, but is there someone else? Okay, well, if not, please know that what you're doing is of great value, whether or not you choose to share it with others or with the world. It is being shared. So I think I'll go on to and give you another prompt. I think we have time to do this and maybe share again. So I'll introduce the next idea. And again, this prompt is one that asks you to hold your loved one or many loved ones in your thoughts, but it is not directly about the person. Death dons a distinct mask to everyone he visits. Patrick said that death is different everywhere he goes, and we see this when we talk about the biography. And I find that it's sometimes very revealing to personify death, to show how different this person, the angel of death, is in so many different circumstances. Jordan, if you would put up slide 8, I think. This one. This is a short segment from a longer poem in which I deal with my obsession with death, called Necromancer. When death parked her wagon by our grove, she sparked my interest in her comings and goings. A dark gypsy beauty admired from afar, her darting gem eyes almost flirt and lure with implied promises. This curandera midwife gyrates around me, her bell-ribboned ankles tapping exotic rhythms as she clanks castanets absent-mindedly at her side. Harboring intimate secrets of every passenger, she keeps herself aloof. So in this section of the poem, death is an exotic, enigmatic seductress, a gypsy dancer who keeps her own rhythm. And she knows us well, but we don't know her yet. And so that's one way of looking at this being who comes. The next slide, please. And this is another of the whole book-length version of my Exploring My Father's Death. I took every aspect and wrote poems about all the things, but this is one in which I think about him being ready long before the moment arrived. And in this poem, Death is the cattle drive trail boss. He neglects the experienced cowboy, the one who's completely ready for the final ride. And Death is busy with the new hands who have to learn about what the journey is like and what they have to release before they can go. So the cowboy's final ride. This cowboy was ready for the last trail, had his knapsack and grub stowed, his bedroll tucked behind the saddle. So much waiting, and Death late with the wagon. Probably out east recruiting a crew of tenderfeet, getting them up to speed. I suppose Death figured this seasoned cowpoke already signed on wouldn't mind. Greenhorns would need to be trained about where the trail was headed and what would have to be left behind. So I in many ways, I dealt with this question of release. Unless we die before we die when we die. And my father was one who gradually for many years, because he had Parkinson's, released so many of his abilities and so many things. So by the time his death came, he was pretty prepared for having given over so much that he would have otherwise been attached to. The next slide, Jordan. Thank you. So in this prompt, I'd like you to try, if nothing else is asking to be written by you, I'd like you to try personifying death. Is it an angel of death, the grim reaper, Santissima Muerte, who is so widely worshipped in Mexico, most holy death? Is it male, female, or epicene? What are the traits? What does death look like? What's the temperament? Is death a fisherman, a golfer, a nurturing mother, a loving companion, a sexy woman? I remember the movie All That Jazz. There was this really gorgeous death figure who was luring on Fosse, who was luring him on. So what is death's occupation, and how does he behave or she behave? Is this this person violent or loving? Maybe it's a little child that wants to take the old person by the hand and lead them for a walk into the forest, whatever. So as you hold your loved ones in your thoughts, take on the question of how do you imagine this death that's going to come for you or that has come for someone you love. And let's see what time it is, how much time. Let's take 10 minutes and then we'll have some time to share. think I'll stop you a little sooner so we'll have some wrap-up time or some times for others to share. So take another minute to come to a place. Jordan, if you would be so kind as to take down the slide so we can see each other. There we go. Okay, let's see if there are some of you who are able to put a mask onto death and let us see what he, she, or it looked like, or they. We're waiting. I'm going to read you. Janice, are you ready?
I guess I'll give it a try.
Right.
It's called The Grim Reaper. It's not long. The Grim Reaper, stealthily wandering the streets of Earth, searching for your next victim to leave the planet Earth. Why, Grim? You really are the grand releaser, releasing us from the confines of the physical body. But why, Grim? Because you know the pain that you will cause us. When you aren't aware that we are really on our way home.
Wow. Nice twist. Yes. Why grim? That's a good question. Why has always been so grim? I was just looking at my book about death, my book of death poems, and in the introduction, I said some poetry talking about home funeral guides and the family taking death back into the place of the family. And I said, so too, poetry has the ability, as Rilke expressed, and this is a quote, Rilke, to make death, who never was a stranger, more distinct and palpable again as the silent, knowing participant in everything alive. I like that. That was a great quote. The silent, knowing participant in everything alive. Okay. Someone else want to share what death looks like to them? Yes, Tisha? Can you unmute?
Oh, sorry. That helps. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. The angel of death. The angel waits behind a thin curtain, there, smiling, knowing, too powerful to see now. But we feel her when we know fear. When we know love, we shrink from her like we shrink from falling in love. Because we fear heartbreak. Terror and love. She holds them both like a scale, a sword and a rose. Which hand will you choose? She smiles, all knowing. One cannot exist without the other. In perfect balance, can you choose both? Our humanity kneels at her feet.
Thank you.
Yes, my book looks a little like yours.
Yeah. So what's the title? Is it Death Poems?
No, it's transformation healing magic. That's, I didn't choose that. That's just what it says on my book.
Thank you. Let's see everyone.
Is it okay if I go?
Yes, please, Bri.
Okay. Deaf. Would you like a cup of tea? Soft voice in a home filled with pastel-colored wallpaper, with matching floral china. The tapping of a silver spoon stirring in the sweetness. She's soft. The day is warm, sun streaming in. She listens, looking at me directly but openly. Looking at me directly but openly, wanting to know about my life.
Oh, can't tell you how many times this afternoon I've just got goosebumps all over. It would be wonderful if any of you are so inclined to want to post your poem or your essay or any of your writings on the what do they call them, resource page. Thank you. Thank you, Brad. That was beautiful. Speaking of the resource page, I forgot to mention that if you haven't had a chance after the weekend, maybe you could go to the resources. I posted a whole bunch of poems that I didn't want to take the time to read so that you would have lots of time, but some lovely things and some good examples from Wendell Berry, where he often he likes to use imagery from the life and the life work of the person that he's writing an elegy for. He incorporates them so well into his poems. So I've given you some I think of the best that the great minds have said about death, and also a series of writings, just little paragraphs from Steiner's lectures about how we can stay connected with the dead. So for both Marianne's and my contributions, you can review those. It's kind of a Reader's Digest a version of all that you might encounter that Steiner has said about staying connected. All right, who else wants to tell us about what death looks like? We have time for one more, I think.
I guess I'm cheating on this one because I write poetry and I wrote this 12 years ago, but I hadn't been back to it to polish it. I love that poem of Dickinson, because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. Mm-hmm. So this was the imagination of a late in life date. Saturn years, a date. Soon comes the friend's embrace. I can't forever put him off. I'll try to look into his face. Then will he grip me close? What joy when someone cares to touch. I knew it several times, though never a perfect fit. Who wanted my whole life? Expecting love at this swell age is not a small conceit. I'd venture less did I not know. This time is no disgrace. How rudely it will seem he comes to sweep me off my feet. My friends, I know I have a few, won't want to come and meet. But this is intimacy grand as sleeping under stars and letting perfect caring touch invade my every pore. He's cold, they say, but true, say I. Too big for you, indeed. He'll come between, not if we're wise. You'll sleep, and you must dream.
Oh, wow. Wonderful. The perfect personification of death, the ultimate lover. What better way to end this amazing time together is this picture of death as the lover. I thank you all for coming, and Jordan, thank you so much for facilitating this.
Yeah, thank you so much, Maureen and Marianne, for both these sessions. It's been very rich. Yeah, and so we have a 30-minute break now, and then we'll be back in the main hall for our closing ceremony.
Once again, I'd like to remind you, because you brought your dead so vividly into as a gift to all of us and into our time together, that you take them out of the technology of the day, bring your loved one back into your heart and into your sleep. And thank you for the sharing.
Thank you very much.
See you all.
Yes, thank you.
See you all in the main hall again soon.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. I loved it. My thank poems weren't ready, but I love to do it.
Thank you.